From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
I got to be the luckiest man in the world to be in this audience today and just to be around some of the guys that I'm around during this weekend. But one of the guys I want to signal out is James Shaq Harris. Well, yes, Shaq. Shaq, if there ever was something real that said a brother from another mother, for me, it's James Shaq Harris. From the time I stepped on Grambling campus, you know, we was fortunate at Grambling to have four Hall of Famers: Willie Davis, Buck Buchanan, Charlie Joyner, and Willie Brown. And I got a chance to know them all. But you know what? The guys that didn't go to Grambling, you wouldn't have known for me. They just like brothers to me. And you know, just like today, and I seen everybody gather around that bus, and I saw those gold jackets. I don't own a gold jacket, but you know what? I feel like I do because of what they've done.
Doug Williams, Super Bowl 22 MVP and personnel executive with the Washington Redskins. On February 2, 2006, one of the most significant yet unpublicized events during Super Bowl 40 week was the first Rich Pollard Alliance Salute to Excellence Award. NFL head coaches Tony Dungy with the Indianapolis Colts, Lovie Smith with the Chicago Bears, and Marvin Lewis with the Cincinnati Bengals were honored with the Johnny L. Cochran Jr. Salute to Excellence Award at a star-studded event in downtown Detroit. It was appropriate to name the award after the late Johnny L. Cochran, since he and Cyrus Merry issued a groundbreaking report: Black Coaches in the National Football League, Superior Performance, Inferior Opportunities, which has been the foundation for hiring changes in the NFL. This report led to the implementation of the Rooney Rule, which required NFL teams to interview a minority candidate for head coaching and senior football operations opportunities. I'm Johnny O. Henson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, the 12th annual Johnny L. Cochran Salute to Excellence Award at Super Bowl 51, Part 2, In Black America.
Surprise, I get invited to an event and I get called up to speak. Okay, I just want to say that I'm very thankful for the men that are up here on this stage, especially John Wooten. He's been a mentor of mine for a long time. I remember when I first started getting thought about as a head coach, the New York Jets had fired my head coach and they wanted me to interview, and I knew what that was all about. You know, I've gone on record saying that I don't oppose the Rooney Rule, that I am for it. I don't like the spirit of how some people use it. Well, I called John, and John said, get your butt in there and do that interview, okay? He had some other people call me and said the same thing. And let me tell you, I spent a couple nights in my office preparing for this interview, because if I'm going to interview, then I want to put my best foot forward.
Anthony Ray Lynn, the new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. In January of 2002, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fired Tony Dungy, their all-time most successful coach, leaving the 32-team National Football League with one minority head coach. The firing was emblematic of what minority coaches in the NFL has long felt. Although minorities made up roughly 70% of the league's players, minority coaches were generally the last hired and first fired. Civil rights lawyer Cyrus Merry and the late Johnny L. Cochran were enraged with Dungy's firing, and they believed it was the result of systematic racial discrimination in the NFL. They commissioned a study to compare the win-loss records of NFL head coaches by race over the previous 15 seasons, and the results were stunning. African-American coaches won more games than their white counterparts, but were less likely to obtain or retain head coaching positions. Merry and Cochran used the study as the basis of the report that entitled Black Coaches in the National Football League, Superior Performance, Inferior Opportunities, and sent it to the league's headquarters. After several months of deliberation, the NFL implemented one of the principal proposals: that every team looking to hire a head coach or front office position is now required to interview at least one minority candidate before making a decision. Reggie McKenzie is the general manager for the Oakland Raiders. McKenzie has spent 30 years in the NFL, 7 years as a player. Selected by the L.A. Raiders in the 1985 draft, McKenzie was named general manager of the Oakland Raiders in January of 2015. In his first 4 years as general manager, McKenzie has overseen significant changes in the organization's scouting, player personnel, and football operations departments, while bringing refined football judgment to the silver and black. McKenzie was named NFL Executive of the Year by the Pro Football Writers of America. In 2016, the Raiders had an NFL-high 7 Pro Bowl selections. The Raiders posted a 12-4 record and advanced to the postseason for the first time since the 2002 season.
First and foremost, I want to thank God for this opportunity. Number one, for allowing me to be in the NFL. It's every kid's lifelong dream. Like most, I've been playing pretty much since I can walk and love this game. Grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, born and raised, until I got drafted by the Los Angeles Raiders. So you can imagine the difference from Knoxville to LA. It was huge. But fortunately, the background that I had from my parents, the coaches that I had, I was pretty much raised by all HBCU coaches from age 7 through I graduated high school. So I owed a big time tribute to all HBCU colleges. Got to the NFL. The Davis family means so much to me. Al Davis drafted me to the Raiders. Mark Davis hires me as their first GM in 2012. So to that, I owe a tremendous amount of gratitude to the late Al Davis and Mark Davis for giving me this opportunity. Had no idea, especially as a player way back when, that I would have this opportunity. But I can say this, I was around many great men that played this game, that coached this game, that studied it, that worked it. And two of our Hall of Famers from the Raiders are here, Coach Art Shell and Mr. Willie Brown. I was fortunate enough to have worked as a player with Coach Shell being the coach and Willie Brown being the coach. So that was a great introduction of true greatness that I had a part as a rookie to be around. And to this day, Willie Brown is in every scouting meeting, every film session, every practice of the Raiders, giving me his words of wisdom and being the support for me through the 5 years. So not only Willie Brown, but all the scouts that I and the coaches that I have, they all are deserving of this award as well as me being presented as Executive of the Year. That's truly an honor. And to that, when I was told, when I got that award, being Executive of the Year, that I was the first minority man of color to get that award from all of the guys that have been before me, you know, the Ozzie Newsome, Shaq Harris, all these guys, and that's when it really hit me, you know, 2016 season, and this award has come to me, so it's very special to me, and all of what we do, the men on the stage here, Mr. Wooten, Harry Carson, you can go back when I started scouting, when Bill Nunn, you had Mr. Charlie Garcia, Rod Gray, we had all these scouts that they were a tight-knit group. And me as a young scout, looking at those guys and seeing the confidence that they had and the abilities and skills and what they represented, that inspired us. And I think they're one of the reasons why there are many more African-American general managers and personnel execs that are at the team at their level now. So to that, I appreciate everything that you do. Woots, we call them Woots. But the one thing about, I want to tell you about John Wooten. Every time, before every game, Mr. Wooten sent me a little text. I didn't think he texts as much. Usually he'll just call you. Now he's a Mr. Texter now. He'll text me telling me to make sure I get those players working, talk about the discipline of the team. He'll give me something so I can make sure these our players work on. He'll say, hey, it's too many penalties. You need to work on that. But he always let me know, great job. Let's keep up the work. And I will always, I'm going to continue to look for those texts, all right, Whoop? I appreciate that. Also, I'm not going to sit down until I say thank you to my wife, because she will not live it down. Some of you guys pay tribute to your wife. I'm paying tribute to you, honey. Yeah. She's been our rock. I've been, as a player, I met her in L.A. She was a UCLA student, and we got married a few years later. Four wonderful kids. Just had my youngest one just committed to USC yesterday, so he's going off to college. So now it's me and you. Again, I want to say thank you. And to echo what everyone has said, let's keep pushing forward. As Fritz Pollard was a pioneer, now it's up to us to continue to carry the torch.
Reggie McKenzie, general manager for the Oakland Raiders. Super Bowl 51 had many events, but one in particular brought everyone together to celebrate diversity in NFL leadership and honor those who worked diligently to make it a reality. The Fritz Pollard Alliance Awards Ceremony, several African-American top executives of NFL teams, NFL African-American head coaches, NCAA head coaches, high school athletes, and the recipient of the Paul J. Tiger Award were honored at this year's event during Super Bowl 51 week in Houston, Texas. The Fritz Pollard Alliance Foundation honored these trailblazers at the 12th annual Johnny L. Cochran Jr. Salute to Excellence Awards. Doug Williams was drafted in the first round, 17th overall, in the 1978 NFL Draft, chosen by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers out of Grambling State University. Williams led the Bucs to three playoff appearances and one NFC title game. However, during his tenure in Tampa, Williams was only paid $120,000 a year, far and away the lowest salary for a starting quarterback in the National Football League. After the 1982 season, William asked for a $600,000 contract. The Bucs owner refused to budge from his initial offer of $400,000. Williams left the team and joined the USFL's expansion team, the Oakland Outlaws. When the USFL shut down in 1986, Williams returned to the NFL, joined the Washington Redskins. Williams made NFL history when he led the Redskins to Super Bowl 22, in which they routed the Denver Broncos, becoming the first African-American quarterback to play and win in a Super Bowl and being named the game's most valuable player. During the Salute to Excellence Awards presentation, Williams had the honor of introducing the 30 HBCU Pro Football Hall of Famers, but before he did, he had this to say.
I got to be the luckiest man in the world to be in this audience today and just to be around some of the guys that I'm around during this weekend. But one of the guys I want to signal out is James Shaq Harris. Well, yes, Shaq. Shaq, if there ever was something real that said a brother from another mother, for me, it's James Shaq Harris from the time I stepped on Grambling campus. You know, we was fortunate at Grambling to have four Hall of Famers. Willie Davis, Buck Buchanan, Charlie Joyner, and Willie Brown. And I got a chance to know them all. But you know what? The guys that didn't go to Grambling, you wouldn't have known for me. They're just like brothers to me. And, you know, just like today, and I seen everybody gather around that bus, and I saw those gold jackets. I don't own a gold jacket, but you know what? I feel like I do because of what they've done. You know, just to watch those guys walk out of there, got to be the greatest feeling, because when you think about it, they traveled roads that were less traveled. They got that through the hard way. You know, I say all the time, the toughest job in the world for a coach is to coach at a historical black college. Coach Riley used to tell us all the time that we've done so much with so little, we can almost do anything with nothing. And he always told us one thing, if it's blocking and it's tackling, we can do it at Grambling. So that way, it wasn't about where we were, it was about what we was doing. We didn't fear anybody. And I remember saying, Coach, why don't we play LSU? Well, number one, LSU wouldn't have played us at that time, I don't think. You take from the mid-70s on back, LSU wouldn't have played us. And Coach told me one day, as I grew older, I understood where he was coming from. He said, we got nothing to gain. I said, why not? We don't beat LSU. He said, no. He said, everybody down in Baton Rouge and the legislature went to LSU. Which means if we beat LSU, we get no more money at Grambling. And that's how smart Coach Rod was back then. I didn't understand it then, but I understand it today. Well, let me tell you this, you know, when I'm walking around and being able to talk to guys like Emmett Thomas, Mel Blount, Starworth, Larry Little, Bethay, and all of them, some of y'all might not understand what that means. But for me, it means a lot. Because I understood where they come from. I understand how they got there. Nobody gave them anything. When you see that gold jacket means something. And think about that gold jacket, you can put any color you want on with it. It matches. Because of what it stands for. And I just want to say this has been a great weekend. It's a great night. I want to thank the NFL for doing what they're doing, bringing all these guys back to show the world. This is not just going to show in Houston or Washington or Baton Rouge or Dallas. It's going to be showing in China, Australia, everywhere that they have the television. They'll see guys from the historical black college walk out on their field. And for you all who are not going to the game, tune in early on, pregame, and watch them walk out on that field. They're not proud because they're walking out there. They're proud because they're not only representing their families and themselves, they're representing their university. And the university got to be proud of when they see them walk out of there, no matter where they're from. From Fort Valley to Jackson State, Southern University, Alcorn, it doesn't matter where they're from. It's who they represent. And I want to say this is a great night. And what I want to do, I want to call every one of them name. I want you to come up here. And I want the representatives, the spouses, the kids, everybody, when I call your name, would like for you to come up here. Lim Barney.
Doug Williams, Super Bowl 22 MVP and personal executive for the Washington Redskins. Since the end of the NFL regular season, the Denver Broncos hired Vance Joseph and the Los Angeles Chargers hired Anthony Lynn to be their respective head coaches. Those two coaches are the latest addition to a growing number of minority coaches in the National Football League. An ESPN study published before last season found that 80 of the league's 85 offensive coordinators, quarterback coaches, and offensive quality control coaches were white, while 23 of 32 defensive coordinators were white. Many head coaches are discovered this way, which leads to fewer head coaches of color. In 2003, when the NFL instituted the Rooney Rule, there was one minority head coach. Over the next 8 years, that number grew, peaking at 8 in 2011. However, in recent years, the number has been dropping. But after dropping to just 4 minority coaches in 2013, the number is rising again and is now once again back up to 8, including 7 African-American coaches. And of the 11 minority coaches since hired the start of the Rooney Rule, 6 are still head coaches in the National Football League. Anthony Lynn was recently hired to be the L.A. Chargers head coach. Lynn was an All-Southwest Conference running back at Texas Tech University. He signed with the New York Giants as an undrafted free agent in 1992. In 2002, Lynn joined the coaching ranks, first with Denver, then with Jacksonville. He spent time in Dallas, Cleveland, New York, and the last 2 seasons in Buffalo as offensive coordinator and interim head coach.
Well, this is a surprise. I get invited to an event and I get called up to speak. Okay. I just want to say that I'm very thankful for the men that are up here on this stage, especially John Wooden. He's been a mentor of mine for a long time. I remember when I first started getting thought about as a head coach, the New York Jets had fired my head coach and they wanted me to interview, and I knew what that was all about. You know, I've gone on record saying that I don't oppose the Rooney Rule, that I am for it. I don't like the spirit of how some people use it. Well, I called John, and John said, get your butt in there and do that interview, okay? He had some other people call me and said the same thing. And let me tell you, I spent a couple nights in my office preparing for this interview, because if I'm going to interview, then I want to put my best foot forward. And I go in there, and Charlie Cashley and Ron Wolf, they're conducting this interview. And after 5 hours of sitting there talking to these men about how I want to run an organization and what I think, they were impressed. They went out and told some other people about this interview process and my interview. And I got more looks the following year. And then in my third year, I got my first NFL job. And I'm telling you, if I hadn't done that interview that I did not want to do, I wouldn't be here right now. Thank you, John. It was really impressive sitting back here with a friend of mine, Art Browse. We walked in. I got in around 5 o'clock, got dressed, rushed over as quick as I could, and got there just in time to hear a couple of people come up and speak, but then to watch all the Hall of Famers up here. That was really impressive. Those are the guys I grew up admiring and looking up to, and my mom was telling me about, you know, the historical black colleges and all the great athletes and Grambling and Coach Robertson, and it was just special just watching you guys come up here. I just want to appreciate you guys for being great role models and paving the way for guys like myself. Now, in saying that, I'm very excited to be the head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, and I'm looking forward to helping them through this transition and being the leader of that organization. I'm excited about our roster, the opportunity that we're going to have to turn that program around and get back in the win column this year. I'm really excited about that. But in saying that, I have nothing else to say. Thank you guys for coming out tonight.
Coach, what was it like when you got the call to inform you that you're going to be the new head coach for the L.A. Chargers?
Well, since they kept me in the hotel and told me I couldn't leave town, I was kind of anticipating that call. So, but it was wonderful. I was excited. Like I said, the leadership of that organization, the talent they have on that roster, I think we have a chance to do some special things there. But that was the job that I wanted, so I was excited.
Why is the first part of the Lions dear to your heart to get you where you are today?
No question. I mean, they've mentored me, they've pushed me, and most importantly, they've supported me throughout the whole process and believing in me. And sometimes you get down on yourself, but John Wooden won't let you. You know, he keeps believing in you and pushing you forward. And just that advice and that support just meant the world to me.
When you look at going forward, what are some of the things you're going to try to instill in your players?
You know, we don't want to beat ourselves. You know, we want to take care of the football. We want to be explosive on the football field, but at the same time, we know we have to be able to execute to do that. So I have to keep it really simple, but at the same time, complex for the defense, and vice versa with defense and offense. But I want to put them in a position to make plays, and I don't want to make this overcomplicate this game for my players. And I think when you do that, they make plays that we can't design anyway. But I'm looking forward to working with the talented roster.
Is there any added pressure, knowing there's not many African-American coaches in the NFL, so as you succeed, it opens the door for others to come behind you?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure just being an NFL coach, period. But, you know, and if I succeed, if it helped another African-American coach or minority coach, that's great, but all I can do is go to work every day and do the very best I can do, then we'll see where the chips fall.
When you're a coach, it's more about managing the staff and instilling in them what are you trying to accomplish?
When you're the head coach, you are the face of the organization. And you are the head coach of everybody in the organization, not just the offense, defense, and special teams. So that's going to be a challenge for me, is taking my hands out of football and doing more organizational and management type work, because I have to be the face of the organization, be the coach of the team, and that's something I haven't done. So I'm sure that's going to be somewhat difficult, but I have a lot of trust and faith in my staff. I have veteran coordinators and all three guys, so they're going to allow me to do that.
How important is faith and family since you're going to be away from them long periods of time?
Well, my faith is what I've always fallen back on. My mother taught me that at a very young age, and that has never left me. So I'm never alone. I know that I have the ultimate support of the one that really matters. So I'm pretty good in that department.
Anthony Lynn, the new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. Kevin Warren is the chief operating officer with the Minnesota Vikings Football Club. Warren is the highest-ranking African-American executive working on the business side for an NFL team. Warren completed his 12th season with the Vikings and is 18th in the NFL. Next year, Minnesota will be the host to the Salute to Excellence Awards.
It's a pleasure to be here today, and I think Mr. Wooten wanted me to say a few words because we're going to host this event next year in the beautiful, warm, and balmy Minnesota. One thing I will say about Minnesota, it may be a little chilly, but there's some wonderful people there, some of which who are part of my family and friends. If they could please stand up, these are the people that have been with me from the very beginning, and I just appreciate what they've done for me. So we're going to host a great event, Fritz Pollard event next year. I promise you, we have the best stadium in all of the National Football League and maybe in all of pro sports. We have incredible ownership. We just have wonderful people here in Minnesota, and we're excited to invite everyone there. There's two quick things I do want to say to encourage two people, one of which is Doug Williams. Doug, I think I see you back there. You mentioned you're dealing with Bell's palsy. Well, as the good Lord would have it, I got Bell's palsy a couple years ago, and the doctor told me he didn't know if my face would ever not be paralyzed, and everything he recommended for me to do, I did the opposite. And I say it sincerely. I increased my workouts. I drank more water. But the biggest thing I did, I said more prayers. And within a matter of 6 weeks, it was gone. So I would ask everyone that before they go to bed tonight and say their prayers, let's pray for Doug. And I know his quick recovery. But, brother, I want you to stay steadfast, stay positive, and you're going to be just fine. And then the person who just left the stage, Mr. Anthony Lynn, I've admired him from afar for many, many, many years.
Kevin Warren, Chief Operating Officer for the Minnesota Vikings Football Club. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O. Henson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.